The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Best fiction to buy for yourself or for others for Christmas. We have Nadine O'Regan with us again tonight. Of course, you know her from our music spot every Tuesday night, and you know her for presenting Songs in the Key of Life here on a Sunday night on Today FM. She's also the arts editor of the Sunday Business Post, which means she reads loads of books. And we also have Maria Dickinson, MD at Dubray Books, which of course is one of Ireland's leading booksellers, with us to make recommendations. And I'm going to start with a book I haven't read yet, and I've been told by Aileen that I have to read it over Christmas, that it's the best novel she's read this year. John Boyne's The Heart's Invisible Furies. What's so good about it? Because you both have it on your list.
Yeah, it's a great, great novel. I enjoyed this one so much. It's a huge novel, around 600 pages, and it takes place over 70 years. It begins in West Cork with the story of Catherine Goggin, a 16-year-old who's expelled by the local priest in the 40s when her pregnancy is discovered. She goes to Dublin, and the story unfolds from there over the generations. And what's particularly brilliant about this book, actually, is that it has both this kind of almost Charles Dickens-like ability to take characters and really breathe life into them. But then real-life people are evoked as well. You know, Charles Haughey is there. I think there's a reference to Bertie Ahern at one point. And it just feels like the life of Ireland lived over 70 years. And there's a lot of humour, but there's a lot of sort of painful moments as well, because John Boyne doesn't shirk from discussing Ireland's sort of harsher realities and what it's like to, say, have a child out of wedlock at that time, or what it's like to be gay. It's a very, very interesting and also remarkable book.
What did you like about it so much, Maria?
It's incredibly, incredibly powerful book, and in many ways, you know, as Nadim's saying, you know, the subject matter could be rather grim, but it has such life, such beautiful characters, such warmth and such humour through it. I really couldn't recommend it highly enough.
Okay, another book the both of you have picked, and Maria, I'll ask you about this. Another one that I've seen lying around the house and I haven't got to yet, Gail Honeyman's book, Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine.
This has been a debut sensation from Gail Honeyman this year, and a real word of mouth bestseller. It didn't get any massive promotion, but has just been recommended over and over and over by booksellers, by readers. Eleanor is a very unusual individual, fair to say, and when you pick up the book for the first 20-30 pages, you wouldn't be too keen on her. She's a spiky soul, awkward, bit of a loner, but as the book progresses, she slowly makes friends with a kind of awkward guy in the IT department, yeah, in her work, and you slowly discover the battles that she's been fighting. It's an incredibly kind book,
yeah,
and it really reveals as you go through what she's been through.
If you don't shed a tear by the end, you're not human. I mean, it's just one of those books where it's incredibly dark in parts, actually, but it begins almost like this quirky little read, because Eleanor's so odd. She signs her emails with Miss Oliphant, and she'll tell you that she was trying some small talk in the office. She'll say things like, "I essayed some chit-chat." Be like, what is going on here? Who is this character? But then as things develop, you notice that she has her routines. She's two bottles of vodka every weekend. She has the same Tesco meal every night. And you start to really feel for her, and you start to understand exactly what's happening. What's most interesting about this book, I think, is that fundamentally it's a book about loneliness, which is a subject that's not often explored in this way through the medium of quirky, funny fiction. And that's what makes it so moving at the end.
Okay, another one that you've both agreed on, and this was actually the winner of the Irish Novel of the Year at the BGE Awards, Midwinter Break by Bernard McLaverty. Tell us about this, Maria.
This is a very powerful but really very gentle book. It's the portrait of a long-standing marriage, a couple who are sort of getting on in years, who take a midwinter break to Amsterdam. So quite a quiet concept for a book, but as the book goes on, you start to unpack the layers of their relationship and find that, as with all relationships, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. And there are various problems in the relationship that become clear throughout it. Anne Enright reviewed this rather beautifully, and she said, of course, in a long-term relationship, you never kiss the same person twice.
What did you think of it, Nadine?
Yeah, I wasn't that keen on starting it, I'll have to be honest, because I was a bit like, the plotline seems a little bit dull, you know? Older middle-class couple head off for a break. Once I actually got into it, I realised that there is so much in the tiny observations between the two characters, the way they've lived together for so long, and they can read each other's habits, and also this sense of frailty, because they're getting older, and the man is, like, he's falling in the shower. They have a little thing called the ailment hour, where they discuss each other's various health problems, and it becomes like a running joke. And it's about how a couple grows grow older together and might actually decide to not grow old together, to potentially live out their final years quite differently. And that's actually something we see these days a lot, that when maybe a son or a daughter goes to college, the couple quite surprisingly decide to break up, much to everybody's shock. And it's that kind of a book where actually everybody is reconsidering their relation to each other, and they're going, well, actually, it's the cliche that we stay together, but do we have to?
Okay. Philip Pullman's new novel is one you like, Maria.
Yes, this was one that was very much, very long awaited, of course, within the trade and within the public as well. He describes it as an equal to his Northern Lights series.
This is Le Belle Sauvage Book of Dust,
yes,
Volume 1.
Yes, that's right. Volume 1 of a series of prequels to the Northern Lights series. And I absolutely loved it. I approached it with some trepidation, being a big fan of the Northern Lights series, but it absorbed me in a way that books do when you're a teenager. You know, my eyes widened during the adventure scenes, my heart pounded.
Is this not a series that really is for teenagers, or is this for any age?
To be honest, the people who are buying this book in our stores are very definitely adults. There are people who read these, the Northern Lights series, as teens, and they're incredibly literary books. They're very clever books, and certainly this one has quite a strong political subtext to it. So while, you know, they could be read by teenagers, they're fantastic reads
for
adults.
Okay, tell us about the Sally Rooney book, Nadine, Conversations with Friends.
All right, well, I did call this in a review I was writing the sort of the hipster choice, which sounds a little bit derogatory, but actually shouldn't be seen as such, because it is a book that is it's definitely one of my novels of the year, in the sense that it completely restructures our idea of what a novel is or can be. She has the story of two friends, two female friends who were formerly lovers, who become friends with an older, very hip, very sophisticated couple, and one of them embarks on an affair with the other. This older couple are married, and essentially the book is so different from John Boyne's novel, because John Boyne's novel is all about traditional structures gradually coming loose, whereas Sally Rooney's novel more or less says, well, you don't have to be gay, you don't have to be straight, you don't have to be anything. It's a novel of conversations, as the title suggests, conversations with friends, where everything is unpicked, including, you know, what it means to just live in the Ireland of now. So as a provocative read, you'll read this one and you'll go back and you'll read it again and you'll get something new from it every time. It sounds like it's got a conventional plot, but actually it's anything but.
Tell us about Tin Man by Sarah Winman.
This is a beautiful book that tells the story of a friendship, really between three individuals. Michael and Ellis are friends as teenagers and form a deeper relationship as they get a little older, until Annie crashes into their lives. Michael falls in love with her and marries her. Now, you'd think that might ruin the relationship between Michael and Ellis, but that continues. It's a story about friendship. It's a story about loss and about the quiet little stories that happen in individual lives that are incredibly, incredibly powerful. It's a beautiful read and a real bookseller's favourite. You'll have an awful lot of people recommending it.
Nadine, another book that didn't get a great reaction in Ireland but got a wonderful reaction overseas is one that I read in two sittings and was really taken by, and that was Roddy Doyle's Smile.
Yeah, Roddy Doyle's Smile got a very divisive reaction. I think that's partly because it's not so much a novel as a novella being sold as a novel. It's a very slight read in the sense that you can pick it up and have it done in one evening. I really liked it.
She did it in one evening where I did it in two. But anyway, that's okay.
I'm going to pace, Matt. I have to. But like, I found it very moving. It's the story of a man called Victor, who's kind of a ghost in his own hometown of Dublin. You know, he's separated, he's living in an apartment, he hangs out in pubs because he doesn't have that much to do, and he's trying to fill his hours. Now, I don't want to give too much away here, because the end of the book takes a really sharp turn, and it will leave you wondering, A, if you have it correct in terms of what Roddy Doyle is saying.
Thinking back everything you thought about in the book earlier.
And B, should you read the whole thing again just to check? But for all that, for all the fact that some people say the end of the novel could be seen as a misfire, I have to say, you pick up Roddy Doyle's book, as you do with much of his fiction, and you sit down and you keep reading. You're immersed in it, and I was immersed in this book.
Okay, one book that both of you have on the list as well, and indeed Hannah Kent was a guest on the programme earlier this year, Maria, her book The Good People, which is historical fiction set in Ireland in the 1920s.
It is. It's actually in the 1820s. Based actually on a true story of a medicine woman of sorts who was tried for the murder of a child in a small village in Kerry. Bad things have been happening. Child has been stillborn. Cows have been dying. Very various sort of people have dropped dead, and the local people are looking for someone to blame, and they blame a small child who is disabled, and they say he's a changeling and he's impacting on them. There's a medicine woman in the story, a herb hag as they call her, who is trying to help him to draw out this changeling, but something desperately sad happens in the course of it. Okay. It's a really wonderful book, rather like Burial Rites, very immersive, very well researched.
Okay, let's move on to other ones. Two guests we've had recently here. We've had both Anthony Horowitz and Lee Child with us recently. The Word is Murder is Anthony Horowitz's book, The Midnight Line by Lee Child. What did you make of the two of those books?
The Word is Murder is so much fun. It is just an unputdownable light read. Anthony Horowitz features in the book as this beleaguered author who has tons of projects. Steven Spielberg is asking him to do things, and he's up to his eyes and he's trying to decide on his next project, and then a detective approaches him and says that he has a real life murder case that he wants Anthony to help him solve, and then together they'll write a book about it and split the profits 50-50. And Anthony is a bit like, I don't know, but he's sort of drawn in because it's the story of this woman who goes and arranges her own funeral, and then 6 hours later she's murdered, and he's kind of, his interest is sort of piqued. The great thing about this book is not only is it very twisty and turny and you want to find out who the murderer is, but Anthony Horowitz is just gas as a character. I mean, he is just being irritated by this detective all the time. There's one amazing scene where Spielberg arrives into his parlour and they're chatting about some big film that they're going to do together, and then the detective sort of blunders in and he's like, we've got a clue, you have to come. And Anthony Horowitz is like, get out of my face, Steven Spielberg is right here. And I think the joy of this book is kind of, you know, recognising these real life figures and seeing them sort of satirised in the fiction, as well as having a brilliant crime drama on spool before you.
Lee Child, what's it like?
Lee Child, I really enjoyed it. I don't know, I have to be honest.
The man, like, with the short sentences.
Yeah, and the incredibly craggy features. I mean, Lee Child basically looks like what you imagine Jack Reacher would look like, and definitely Tom Cruise.
They're
doesn't.
They're both 6'5", yes.
And they both have enormous hands. And it's his 22nd or 23rd novel in the series. And I have to say, I really enjoyed it. Very short sentences, very terse, very gripping. He writes in this, Lee Child is famous for, you know, he likes to smoke a few joints and eat a lot of sugary snacks and wander around his apartment in New York, and he writes in this very compressed, beautiful style. And in the book, Jack Reacher is kind of wandering around the Midwest. He stops by a little jewelry shop and he notices this ornament or this piece of jewellery that he thinks belongs to a woman who was a former colleague, and he thinks this means that she must be in trouble. Now, this is a really slim plot line, but it manages to go from there into very interesting territory. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, crime fiction is a big seller all the time. A lot of Irish crime fiction, a lot of female crime fiction writers.
It's been a fantastic year for debut fiction and for Irish female crime writers. So you've got the likes of Sam Blake, you've got Sinead Crowley, who's doing fantastically well, Catherine Ryan Howard. So it's really, really strong Irish content. Tana French again would be a wonderful Irish crime writer who is going from strength to strength, and then great debut crime fiction as well, the likes of Ali Land's Good Me, Bad Me, Sarah Pimman's Behind Her Eyes.
Okay, let's move on to this. And Marion Keyes' latest book, The Break, is another one you enjoyed.
Oh yes, yeah, it's an absolutely wonderful read. Every book of Marion's I decide is the best one that she's ever written.
But do you think?
This one is, I thought, was absolutely superb. It tells the story of Amy and Hugh. Hugh decides that he wants to take a break from their marriage to just go off for 6 months and rediscover himself. Amy is, as you can imagine, distinctly unimpressed. But as with all Marion's books, it's warm, it's witty, it's wise, it's great fun.
Now, the only thing I'd say about this book, I think Marion Keyes writes to an incredibly high level all the time, so all her books are usually well worth a read. But the one thing I did find with The Break was that the plotline sort of suggests that Amy would be miserable for most of the book because her husband is just basically headed off on her.
She has a lot of fun.
She has loads of fun. I found that hard to swallow, but like that said, it's very well written and very engaging while you're reading it. And actually, a lot of authors this year have tackled very difficult storylines within superficially very light tales. So she tackles a very difficult abortion storyline within that book, and she makes it very, very realistic. And it's interesting to see what we would think of maybe as a commercial fiction author achieve that.
oh my God, what a complete Aisling. This is a debut from Emer McLeish and Sarah Breen working together.
This book is an absolute ray of sunshine in a world gone mad. Everybody knows an Aisling. Aisling is from down the country. She has a nice, sensible job up in Dublin. She goes down home weekends, spends them with a GAA boyfriend, John, and she's just waiting for the ring and a nice house with a nice bit of frontage. Aisling is, it's kind of gentle satire, if you like. Kind of a, you know, if you think of sort of a female country Russell Carroll Kelly, if you can get your head around that. But it's a very clever book, very kind, pokes fun at everybody, but very gently. There's this
and
fantastic...
And very, very poignant at the end.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. And similarly, actually, has a strong kind of repeal message in it too.
Blind Boy Boat Club. Oh. The gospel according to Blind Boy Boat Club. This has become a real hit for people.
Yeah, I mean, some of the biggest, I suppose, fiction hits this year. And by the way, it's important to say Irish fiction has had an incredible year when you think of the Sally Rooneys, Emer McLeish and Sarah Breen, and now Blind Boy Boat Club. Like, the quality coming out this year is phenomenal. But they're all, well, a lot of them are through these amazing fictional creations. So Blind Boy Boat Club, in his debut short story collection, has created the nuttiest and most bizarre offering. And it's part of the joy of the book is actually watching him do something weirder and weirder and weirder. And half of it, to be honest, Matt, is not repeatable. I mean, there's a story in there about Michael Collins and Eamon De Valera that is just not explainable, I don't think, on air. It's called Arse Children. And there's another story...
That's enough.
There's another story about the birds of Cork getting really agitated because Cork people have such strong Cork accents. So there's a Nobel Prize winner who decides to investigate that. And it's just, it's hilarious. Like, it's not, these are experimental tales in a way. Like, I've also recommended the Jeffrey Genaday's short story collection Fresh Complaint, and if you want a traditionally structured, beautiful collection of stories that you could give to anyone, buy that book because it's great. But if you want to give a book to somebody who wants to be surprised and is up for a bit of craziness, give them the Blind Boy Book Club collection.
Okay. The Tom Hanks short story is Uncommon Type.
Yeah.
Is that, did he actually write it himself?
Or did, yeah.
This isn't one of these big names been put to a book that somebody else wrote for him?
No, and if you look, even the cover, like, you can see that it's beautiful. Like, it's got a typewriter on the front of it. It's very much...
He collects typewriters, apparently.
Yeah, and the typewriter features in these tales as kind of a little, I guess, just a subset to tie everything together. Now, I've been dipping in and out of this collection. I was curious more than I was excited about it. I was like, can Tom Hanks write? You know, is this all a bit of an extra sort of string to his and has he been indulged in it being published? But actually, even though the stories wouldn't be at the level of, say, Jeffrey Eugenides, they are quite syrupy at points. They're a little bit sugary sweet. They're nice. Like, Tom Hanks is nice. They're nice. It's lovely. Like, you'll read it over winter by a roaring fire and you'll be like, ah, that was a lovely story. Like, it's that kind of stuff. And it's good. He is good.
Okay, anything we've missed out on, Maria?
Well, we were going to fit in a couple of teen books if we can. My book of the year would certainly be The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, which is a book that really reflects the Black Lives Matter movement. Story of a young girl, Star Thomas, who witnesses one of her close friends get shot in a car for reaching for his comb. And she is going to quite a posh prep school. She's not involved in the kind of gang world at all, but she gets drawn, obviously, from this into activism. It's a brilliant book and it'll make you absolutely furious.
And just on the teen front as well, I'd really like to recommend Turtles All the Way Down from John Green. He wrote The Fault in Our Stars. This book, we've heard a lot over the past year about people suffering with anxiety and mental health issues, and a lot of the biggest bestsellers have been through the medium of non-fiction or self-help tomes. This book, if you know anyone with an issue with anxiety or that type of thing, just give them this book because it is a remarkable portrait of a teen who suffers with anxiety and OCD and goes through those dramas. And John Green himself, he's a huge bestseller across the world. He's talked about his own issues on the subject. It is incredibly astutely observed and it actually packs in a nice adventure story there as well. It's ostensibly for teens, but really for everyone.
Are teenagers still reading books?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, huge growth in the teen market at the moment. Yeah.
Are they getting themselves or is it their parents going
and getting
the books
them
for
themselves?
Them?
And they are reading them in print, very definitely.
All right, look, we're out of time. Maria Dickinson from Dubray Books, thank you very much for joining us. I hope you have a busy Christmas. And Nadine O'Regan from the Sunday Business Post, who will be back tomorrow for the best non-fiction books, where she will be joined again this year by the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, who would be better read than both of us, I'd imagine, Nadine.
Speak for yourself, Matt.
Back tomorrow with that.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.